Good morning. Oops. Happy Thursday, everyone. Good morning. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for today, which is Thursday, December 19th, 2019. I am going to begin by reading the weather on the front page and also the headlines. And our weather for today, they don't have it on the front page. Okay, they have instead 6 days until Christmas. Let me see if I can find it on the back page. Here we go. Today it should be mostly sunny with a high around 37 and a low around 24. And our wind should be south-southwest from 5 to 10 miles an hour. And on the front page, we have, it's a beautiful thing to see, which is about the Lotus for homeless women that they are starting. Agribusiness Park making progress. Sexton elected majority whip in Iowa House. A woman charged for blocking a police car. And the Growth Alliance says there's no place like home. All right, let's begin with it's a beautiful thing to see. And this Lotus helps struggling women find hope. This is by Chad Thompson. And we have a picture of Ashley Valla. She is the executive director of the Lotus Community Project. And she's in the former St. John's Lutheran Church, which has been made over into a homeless shelter for women and children. It opened in January of 2019, so it's almost a year old. A single woman juggling a low-wage job and family can be one financial emergency away from crisis, and that crisis could leave her without a home. When that happens, the Lotus Community Project is a place that can help, according to its executive director, Ashley Valla. Lotus is a homeless shelter for women and children located along 170th Street in rural Webster County. A lot of what we see is single women, some of them mothers, mothers, maybe education is a factor. They are working low-wage jobs and it's just not cutting it, said Valla, who was once homeless. Something really small can snowball for them, and before you know it, they're facing eviction and homelessness. In Bethany Erb's case, it was separation from her separation from her significant other that caused her to be without a home. Erb of Lorenz called Valla in the early morning hours of July 5th. I needed to get away, Erb said. Lotus was a place I could be in a safe zone. That same morning, Erb and her infant child came to Lotus, which has been housed in the former St. John's Lutheran Church since January. The sanctuary has been split up by partitions, creating a number of sleeping spaces for women and their children. Through Lotus, Erb got help applying for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and was put in touch with other needed services. She received job training and volunteered in the community. We tried to help her get on her feet, Valla said. We helped her get housing all while she had a six-month-old baby. That's not easy to do. It wasn't seamless. Erb said she struggled to hold down a job as she fights a lengthy custody battle. But she's been living independently in her own apartment for 3 months. Valla said that some women might stay at Lotus for a couple of days, while others may be there for 6 months. Some women are leaving toxic relationships. Some have lost a job. We see a lot of young moms, Valla said. They struggle with daycare. Women losing their jobs from daycare, sometimes they might have a good job when it goes past typical daycare hours. That is a big thing. So then we have to try and find them an appropriate programming or daycare. Sometimes AFIS, Athletics for Education and Success, which offers after-school programs, is the answer. Other Lotus guests are trying to transition from prison back into society. When Alyssa Sweeney of Fort Dodge was released from prison in August, she wasn't sure where she would end up. I had nowhere to go, Sweeney said. The Fort Dodge Residential Correctional Facility, also called the Halfway House, doesn't accept women. While waiting for her release, Sweeney was told about Lotus. So she contacted Vala and was accepted into the program. Lotus has some restrictions. It is a drug-free facility. It does not accept sex offenders, and women fleeing from domestic violence are referred to the Domestic Sexual Assault Outreach Center. Being at Lotus has allowed Sweeney to figure out her next moves. "I am doing really well," said Sweeney, who spent 9 months in prison. "I work at the apple orchard. I have saved up enough money to get my license, and I just got a car." Her job at the apple orchard is seasonal. "I am looking for employment when I am done here," Sweeney said. "I am just continuing to save as much money as possible for when I am able to leave here." Lotus has served nearly 150 people in 2019. 80 women and more than 60 children have been in the shelter, according to Vala. Many women have found work at the Prestige Foods or of Iowa pork plant south of Eagle Grove, which is about a 13-minute drive from Lotus. "A lot of our women become employed at Prestige," Vala said. She estimates between 15 and 20 women work at Prestige, a 700,000-square-foot plant that opened last spring. "They are very successful when they are employed there," Vala said. "In 2 weeks' pay, they can buy a decent little car. A lot of our women who work there leave here and don't need any assistance." Vala, who was appointed by Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds to sit on the Iowa Council on Homelessness, is pleased to see those opportunities for the women she serves. "I think that's really the goal," Vala said. "It's a beautiful thing when you see them get out on their own and they are happy. It can be stressful when you are used to those safety net programs, and now they are doing it on their own. You can see the anxiety, but also how proud they are. It's a beautiful thing to see." Vala spends up to 80 hours a week at the shelter. She might pay a bill or work with clients on their goals. Other times, she is taking phone calls for incoming guests. When she's not at the shelter, she speaks at schools, churches, and service groups. 4 other people work at the shelter. During the month of December, Vala has been trying to spread some Christmas cheer. On Monday, a men's Bible study group from the Badger Lutheran Church came by the shelter to share gifts and a meal. The pastor gave a small sermon on the meaning of Christmas. "I feel like there's a lot of hardships. Even though Lotus is a nice place, the people are still going through a hard time. They may not get everything they want for Christmas, but we try to make sure they get some of those things and that the spirit of Christmas is brought to them." The Lotus Community Project took possession of a 5-bedroom house next to its shelter in September. Vala estimates about $10,000 investment is needed before the house can be opened to guests. It needs a new furnace, carpet, and some appliances, among other things. Vala hopes the house can open by the summer. "In this past year, we had just under $150,000 of renovations to open the shelter, the church," Vala said, "and I'd say we still owe about $15,000. We have maintained an operating budget. It costs us an average of $12,000 a month to operate the shelter, and that's a very conservative budget." Lotus is an A501(c)(3) organization. It serves a 6-county area: Webster, Hamilton, Humboldt, Wright, Calhoun, and Pocahontas. Vala has been grateful for the community support Lotus has received. The Fort Dodge Study Club, for example, has raised about $50,000 for Lotus in the past 2 years. Valero Renewables of Fort Dodge has contributed $33,500 to Lotus. And we have a couple more pictures of Vala standing by her supply of food and one of the beds in one of the rooms. All right, and the next article on the front page, Agribusiness Park Making Progress. And this is by Elijah Desiers. This is from Eagle Grove. Wright County's Agribusiness Park is making progress with steady construction in Eagle Grove, where officials expect the project to be potentially ready in the spring and slated for substantial completion by June 1, 2020. The project, initially slated for completion in mid-November by winning contractor Riley Construction Company of Ocean, had been delayed due mostly to bad weather. "They're going to keep going as long as the weather somewhat holds out," said Wright County Supervisor Rick Rasmussen. With grading done for the necessary roads, cement is ready to be poured for the parts of the project. The water system, which was awarded in two sections to contractors in November for a total cost of $729,330, will install two wells, water lines, a permanent generator, and treatment buildings, according to Cindy Littweiler, Director of Wright County Economic Development. A retention pond and sewer lines should be complete soon. Bids came in higher than the initial county engineer's estimates. Rasmussen said that two wells and the water supply system will serve the 80-acre campus with adequate water pressure. A meeting with supervisors on December 23rd will discuss the next steps for the campus, which the county has undertaken for $1.777 million. That would be $777,000, wouldn't it? That bid came about $165,000 higher than the engineer's estimate of $1,611,354. The first 40 acres of the new campus will be used for infrastructure, and the other half used for retention ponds and stockpile needed to build roads, Rasmussen said. "We've got some businesses looking at it. We've gotten a fair amount of interest." He said supervisors are hoping the businesses will bring more jobs to Wright County. "That's our biggest thing, just to get the infrastructure out and get the county growing some more," he said. The county's Economic Development Authority is hoping to locate more businesses in the area, an initiative prompted by Prestige Foods processing plant, which is near the Agribusiness Park. "We're hoping it provides the opportunity for industries or businesses to locate to that area if they choose," said Littweiler. "We're excited and hopeful. With Prestige locating here, it made sense to provide some spot for additional businesses and industry. With 80 acres near the intersection of Highway 17 and 320th Street, she said the park could be divided up into plots as small as 5 acres or substantially larger, depending on business needs as the dust settles. The county purchased the land in January. "We're excited and hopeful," she said, "pleased with progress so far given the weather." And the next article, Sexton elected majority whip in Iowa House. He is taking top leadership role in Republican caucus. And this is by Bill Shea. State Representative Mike Sexton of Rockwell City has been elected to one of the top four leadership positions in the Iowa House of Representatives. He was chosen Wednesday by his fellow Republican representatives to be the House Majority Whip. He will be the top aide to House Majority Leader Matt Winchell of Missouri Valley. "It'll be my responsibility to take care of the Republican caucus," Sexton said Wednesday evening, "making sure all the Republican representatives are on the House floor for votes will be one of his basic responsibilities. He will also fill in for Winchell when needed." In his new role, he said he expects to spend a little more time in Des Moines each week than when the legislature is in session. In the House Majority Party, the whip ranks below the majority leader, the Speaker Pro Tem, and the Speaker. Historically, the majority and minority whips have been responsible for tallying votes to make sure their party has all the votes it needs to pass its legislation. Sexton said he believes his leadership position will be beneficial to representing his House district because someone with a leadership role has more clout. It is good for House District 10 that the representative is part of leadership, he said. House District 10 includes Calhoun, Humboldt, and Pocahontas counties, plus most of western Webster County. He said he campaigned for the position by contacting all the House Republicans prior to Wednesday's vote. I was very excited when I found out I won, Sexton said. He had previously served as an assistant majority leader. And we have Growth Alliance says there's no place like home. Programs aim to bring former area residents back to Fort Dodge. And we have a picture of some of those white little things that you see in the middle of tables if you go out to eat. Local businesses and restaurants like Old Boston are supporting the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance's There's No Place Like Home campaign to entice former area residents to move back to Fort Dodge to live and work. And this is by Kelby Wingert. The Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance has started a new marketing campaign aimed at enticing native Fort Dodge residents to return to the area to live and work. There's No Place Like Home targets former Fort Dodge residents who may be visiting the region while home for the holidays, said Kelly Halstead, Economic Development Director for the Growth Alliance. Following a survey the Iowa Economic Development Authority commissioned earlier this year to find out why people travel to Iowa or choose to move to Iowa. Halstead said the Growth Alliance decided to execute a survey in August and September to find out why people visit or why they move to Fort Dodge. One of the results is people that have moved here have a propensity to move back, and they have the propensity to stay longer as well, Halstead said. We thought, let's target them while they're here for the holiday and make a big deal about it, making sure parents and friends have talking points for when they're back for the holiday and saying, this is why you should be moving back. The Growth Alliance has marketing materials throughout the community and business to show visitors what it sees as the biggest draws for people to move back: low cost of living, nearby family and friends, sports and recreation options, short commutes, fine arts opportunities, social events, and jobs. Businesses have table tents in their dining rooms, and others have posters up. The Growth Alliance is also doing a social media campaign with its project, featuring an array of individuals who grew up in Fort Dodge, moved away, and then decided to move back for various reasons. The goal is to highlight why people should want to move back to their hometown. Fort Dodge is a great place to raise a family and be with your relatives and friends, Halstead said. And we have great jobs, too, and a lot of the amenities that younger people are looking for. There are more than 700 jobs open in the Fort Dodge area, she said. The Growth Alliance has a job board on its website. The Growth Alliance also has a module on its website with rental properties to help prospective residents find housing. Aside from family connections and jobs, one of the biggest things that draws former residents back to Fort Dodge is the quality of life, Halstead said. You have to give credit to the city and the county and our leaders that they recognize that the quality of life is an important piece of the workforce. It's an important thing that our leaders right now really recognize that they do have to spend some money on quality of life features for our community to really attract and make Fort Dodge and the region a place where people want to come and live. Fort Dodge native Cole Peterson hadn't lived in Fort Dodge in nearly 20 years when he and his wife Molly Nelson moved their family back in the fall of 2017. Peterson, who is an investment advisor representative at Central Financial Group, said he and Nelson were living in Waukee with their two young sons, Joseph and David, when the couple found out they were pregnant with twins, Etta and Isla. They thought that Fort Dodge would be a great place to raise a large family, Peterson said. The real eye-opening thing for me was when Joseph was going to be a kindergartner. There were 1,000 kids in just his grade at Waukee, he said. Molly and I both came from Fort Dodge, a class of 290 people, and we thought maybe it was time to go a little smaller school district. Much has changed in the 20 years since Peterson and Nelson lived in Fort Dodge. It's a little different seeing it through adult eyes than seeing it as a kid, he said. You see all the good in Fort Dodge. Peterson said he thinks there's more opportunities for his family in Fort Dodge because of the smaller size of the city. He encourages others who have moved away to come back to see how things have changed and those who want to spread their wings to do so as well. Go out and explore. See what's out there, he said. When you come back to Fort Dodge, you'll figure out that everything here is just as good, if not better. There's a lot of opportunities here that don't present themselves in other places. You can work for a small business here or own a small business here, where I couldn't imagine doing that in Waukee because there's so much competition. Fort Dodge has a small-town feel with a big city opportunities, he said. Peterson said Fort Dodge welcomed his family back with open arms, just as it would with anybody moving back home. Once you're a Dodger, you're always a Dodger, he said. People from Fort Dodge really stick together. And I'd have to agree with that. And we have one more article. Woman charged with blocking police car. Initial appearance made after July incident at Walmart. And this, again, is by Elijah Dishius. A Fort Dodge woman was charged with harassment of a public official after police alleged she blocked an officer's squad car with shopping carts at Walmart. Samantha Klinger, 27, appeared at magistrate court Wednesday to answer a recent arrest stemming from the incident, which criminal complaints indicate happened on July 5th. The charges come after a Fort Dodge police officer, while at Walmart to investigate an unrelated assault, returned to her patrol vehicle in the parking lot to find it surrounded by shopping carts. It is unclear what motives precipitated this alleged harassment. The warrant issued for her arrest was not executed until Tuesday. Klinger subsequently posted a $600 bond and entered a not guilty plea for the harassment charge, as well as a charge of interference with official acts. I observed that Klinger purposely and knowingly placed shopping carts around the patrol vehicle so that I could not enter it or back out of the parking spot, the complaint written by the officer reads. The complaint also notes that the defendant allegedly posted a photo to social media about the interaction afterward, in which they say she admitted to deliberately blocking the car. The photo was not available on her social media pages as of Wednesday. Klinger's non-jury trial is scheduled for January 10th. Harassment of a public official, a simple misdemeanor, is punishable by up to 30 days in jail, per Iowa code. She might have wished she hadn't done it. All right, let's go to the back of page one, which is page two. We have from our files, here is a picture from 15 years ago of Adam Plotz. He was then six, so I figure he's what, 21 now? He's enjoying being with education students as he keeps time with the Christmas tunes in the kindergarten music class at Cooper Elementary School. Kindergarten students shown are Brandon House, Abby Stubnival, and Taylor Kirkpatrick, who probably have fun looking at this picture today. All right, let's look at this date in history. Today is Thursday, December 19th. It's the 353rd day of 2019, and there are 12 days left in the year. Today's highlight, on December 19th, President Bill Clinton was impeached by the Republican-controlled House for perjury and obstruction of justice. He was subsequently acquitted by the Senate. Well, there's deja vu. Also on this date in 1977, during the American Revolutionary War, General George Washington led his army of about 11,000 men to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to camp for the winter. In 1950, General Dwight D. Eisenhower was named commander of the military forces of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. In 1960, fire broke out on the hangar deck of the nearly completed aircraft carrier USS Constellation at the New York Naval Shipyard. 50 civilian workers were killed. In 1975, John Paul Stevens was sworn in as Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. In 1997, James Cameron's epic film Titanic opened in the U.S. theaters. In 2001, the fires that had burned beneath the ruins of the World Trade Center in New York for the previous 3 months were declared extinguished except for a few scattered hot spots. In 2002, Secretary of State Colin Powell declared Iraq material breach of a UN disarmament resolution. In 2003, plans were unveiled for the signature skyscraper, a 1,776-foot glass tower at the site of the World Trade Center in New York City. In 2008, citing imminent danger to the national economy, President George W. Bush ordered an emergency bailout of the U.S. auto industry. 10 years ago, a UN climate conference in Copenhagen ended with the non-binding accord to show for 2 weeks of debate and frustration. The deal was brokered by President Barack Obama, who attended the conference on his final day. A snowstorm paralyzed much of the eastern U.S. on the last holiday shopping weekend. 5 years ago, President Barack Obama said Sony Pictures Entertainment made a mistake in shelving The Interview, a satirical film about a plot to assassinate North Korea's leader. Sony defended its decision, saying it had no choice but to cancel the film's Christmas Day theatrical release because the country's top theater chains had pulled out in the face of threats. And 1 year ago, President Donald Trump announced that all 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria would be leaving that country, a move that sparked alarm and outrage from Republican lawmakers and prompted the resignation of Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. Trump explained the decision by declaring victory against the Islamic State group. And our thought for today, he that jokes confesses, and that's an Italian proverb. Let's see, what time is it? Okay, got a few more minutes here. Time to read the community calendar. The Trinity Regional Hospital Retirees Coffee will be at 9 a.m. at Hy-Vee. The Blandon Memorial Art Museum is open at 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and that's located at 920 3rd Avenue South. Admission is free. The Centel Frontier Retirees and Auxiliary Luncheon is at 11:30 a.m. at the Peking Garden. That's at 2510 5th Avenue South. Webster County Genealogical Society will meet at noon to 3 p.m. at the Fort Dodge Public Library at 424 Central Avenue. That's at room 134. Noon Sertoma Club meets at noon at the Pizza Ranch. A.A. Alano Club, noon and 7 p.m. at 12 North 7th Street. The Alzheimer's Support Group from 4 to 5 p.m. at the Webster County Fuller Hall Sampson Room. Al-Anon Thursday Night AFG Book Study at the Alano Club. That's 5 to 6 p.m. at 12 North 7th Street. We have Bingo, which will be at 6:30 p.m. at the Opera House in the Fort Museum and Frontier Village. That's at 1 Museum Road. And it says this is the second anniversary party. There will be speedball, door prizes, food, $75 payouts, and early birds can come at 6:30. AA, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Webster City Trinity Lutheran Church in Webster City. Divorce Care at 6:30 p.m. at Grace Lutheran Church at 211 North 9th Street. The Corn Belt Chorus Barbershop Harmony Practice at 7 p.m. at the United Methodist Church. That's at 201 East Nebraska Street in Algona. AA at 7 p.m. in Lake City at the Union Church on West Main Street. A Lizard Creek Blues Society at 7 p.m. The meeting is at 621 North 18th Street. Fort Dodge Kennel Club meets at 7 p.m. at the club building at 210 10th Street Northwest, and the public is welcome. And we have an NA from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Shalom Center. That's at 501 North 12th Street. All right, and one more, and then I'll read the obituaries. There is a free dental day planned for veterans. Webster County Public Health's iSmile Silver program, in conjunction with the local dentist, is planning a free dental clinic for Iowa veterans. The clinic, which would take place in early 2020, would provide cleanings, extractions, x-rays, fillings, and more to veterans who lack insurance or funds to pay for dental services. The event is open to all veterans in Iowa, not just those residing in Webster County. Veterans who are in need of dental care are asked to contact Amber Cook at Webster County Public Health with information about their dental needs so that a schedule for the upcoming clinic can be compiled. Cook can be reached at 515-573-4107 or at amber.cook, that's with an E, at webstercountyiowa.org. All right. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the blind and print disabled. The messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now I'm going to read today's obituaries. Let me put it on the top here. All right. The first one is Damian Huffaker, H-U-F-F-A-K-E-R, Huffaker. He's from Eagle Grove. Damian James Huffaker, the son of Dean and Christine Huffaker and Jennifer and Jason Brewer, was born on February 10th, 1995, in Clarion, Iowa. He attended school in Fort Dodge and Eagle Grove. He graduated from Eagle Grove High School with the class of 2013. While in high school, he participated in cross country, wrestling, and golf. After graduation, Damian worked for the K&K Instruction for a year and has been employed by AGP for the last 5 years. Damian had a zest for life. He never met a stranger, just a new friend, and someone to share his stories with. He loved spending time with his friends and family. Whether it be golfing or hunting, riding motorcycles or snowboarding, he was, as always, ready for a good time. Damian was blessed with the gift of gab. He talked and talked and talked. If he got a laugh out of you, he would talk some more. And each story was a little more huffed up than the one before it. And he was a hugger, a big bear hugger. Why do we hug ourselves? Because we love ourselves. Damian had a smile that lit the room and a laugh that was contagious. He looked forward to his Colorado trips and snowboarding with his buddies. He was always ready for a cold one and would have given the shirt off his back to anyone in need. Damian passed away unexpectedly on Wednesday, December 11th, 2019, at the age of 24 years. He was preceded in death by his grandparents, Dean E. Huffaker and Betty, and Brady Willard and Barbara Willard, and his great-grandparents, and a cousin, Amanda Lehler. Survivors include his parents, Dean and Christine Huffaker of Eagle Grove, and Jen and Jason Brewer of Duncombe. Also his siblings, Bailey Stein and her husband, Justin of Duncombe, Madison Huffaker of Eagle Grove, Alec Huffaker of Eagle Grove, Zachary Bell of Newton, Destiny Nason of Britt, Brianna and Emma Brewer of Duncombe, and his nieces, Peyton and Zoe. His grandparents, Brian Anderson of Woolstock and Kathy Willard of Eagle Grove, and numerous aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. Visitation will be Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Faust Funeral Home in Eagle Grove. A time to remember and celebrate Damien's life will be Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Rails, the depot in Eagle Grove. The family will have a private service. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. And again, that is Damien Huffaker. Then we have Josh D. Barton, and this is from Pacific Junction. Josh D. Barton, 21, passed away on December 12th after a courageous battle with cancer in Omaha, Nebraska, surrounded by his family. And that was Josh D. Barton. Ruby Johnson. Ruby Johnson, 91, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Wednesday, December 18th at the Simpson Health Center at Friendship Haven. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, December 21st at the Gunderson Funeral Chapel. Visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. until the time of the service on Saturday at the Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Fort Dodge. A complete obituary will be in Friday's Messenger. That was Ruby Johnson. Caroline Cruz. This is from Lone Rock. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Lots Creek. Visitation is from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Lots Creek. And that was Caroline Cruz, K-R-U-S-E. Charles A. Kapka. This is from Dowse. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Friday at the Ewing Funeral Home in Clarion, and visitation will begin at 12:30 p.m. prior to the services at the funeral home on Friday. That was Charles A. Kepka. Jolene D. Severs. This is from Humboldt. Jolene D. Severs, 81, formerly of Humboldt, passed away in Kansas on Wednesday, December 18, 2019. Laufesweiler Severs Funeral Home is serving the family, and that is Jolene D. Severs. Vera Brower, this is from Early. Funeral services at 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the Nemaha United Methodist Church in Nemaha. Farber and Ottoman Funeral Home of Sac City, Iowa will be handling the services. And that's Vera Brower. And we also have John Mescher, M-E-S-C-H-E-R. And a funeral mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday at St. Cecilia Catholic Church in Algona, with visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at Oak Crest of Algona. And that's John Mescher. And we also have at Gunderson's, we have Alice Barber and Ruby Johnson. And at Laufesweiler's, we also have Frank D. Patterson, who is 86, and his funeral is today at 10:30 at Laufesweiler Funeral Home. So those are the obituaries for today. Put that aside. And we're ready for the opinion. This local residents, I hope I'm spending it, Lear and Cripp, are true heroes. They risk their lives to pull a man from a burning vehicle. A decision made in a split second can turn someone from a bystander into a hero. The decision those heroes make is to help another human being, even at great risk to themselves. Two area men, Greg Lear, L-E-O-H-R, of Callender, and Ryan Cripp, C-R-I-P-E, of Fort Dodge, became heroes on the evening of January 1st, 2019, when they came upon a wrecked and burning sport utility vehicle in a ditch along a curving section of Webster County Road P-29 between U.S. Highway 20 and Quail Avenue. When he learned that there were still people in the burning vehicle, Lura grabbed the hitch pin from his truck and began using it to try to break the windows on the vehicle. Cripps soon arrived and rushed to help Lear. Altogether, they got Paul Ross out of the blazing vehicle. "These guys went above and beyond," said Webster County Sheriff's Deputy Amy Stringer. "The vehicle was on fire. Pieces of the burning vehicle were actually dripping on them as they were pulling the man out. He would not be here today if it was not for them." Although Paul Ross's wife Sheila died in the crash, the actions of Lear and Cripp prevented a tragedy from being even worse. On December 10th, the two men were honored at the state capitol. They were each presented the Governor's Life Saving with Valor Award by Governor Kim Reynolds and Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg. The men are worthy of the honor. They are true heroes who risk their lives to save another. We join the governor, the Ross family, and the rest of Iowa in honoring our two local heroes. And we have a letter to the editor. Appreciated the bingo game. I would like to thank Santa, the messenger, for the $1,000 I won. It was so much fun watching and waiting every day for 3 months for the bingo numbers and to fill my card. Thanks to Mark, who delivers my paper, for getting it to my door, usually by 6 a.m. Imagine my surprise when that last number showed up. I was on my way to Fort Dodge bright and early. I would also like to thank Friendship Haven for the gift and sponsoring the contest with the messenger. It was lots of fun. Merry Christmas and many thanks. And that's from Joan Kalmorgan of Humboldt. And she's the one that won the $1,000 main prize. All right, in our political cartoon is a donkey, and he's dancing, and he's singing, I guess. And there are four pictures, and he's saying, "All I want for Christmas is to impeach, just to impeach, oh my, to impeach. Gee, if I only could manage to impeach, then I might win in 2020. Okay, so much for the opinion page. I think that's it for the front page, and we're on to... checking it out here. Yep. We're on to the sports page. Wow, we're at 8:31 already. And, of course, the main part, and I won't read it because it's an AP and you'll hear about it later, but it's all about Hayden Fry, who passed away yesterday at 90. But we have some local news. And the first one is called Round One. And we have a picture of Drake Ayala, who's locking up Devin Harmison of Southeast Polk in the 113-pound championship match at state, and that happened last season. This is by Chris Johnson. Before the state meet rolls around in the February December 18th is the date that the Fort Dodge wrestling program and Dodger fans circled on their calendar long ago. Two of the Class 3A's most dominant wrestling programs go toe-to-toe inside the Dodger gym on Thursday as the fourth-ranked Iowa Wrestle Dodgers host number one Southeast Polk. Junior varsity action begins at 6:30 p.m., with varsity to start at approximately 7:30. It will be a good environment to have the kids in, and we're expecting a packed house, said Fort Dodge head coach Bobby Thompson. They travel well, and people will obviously come in and want to see us too. Our kids are eager to compete. When I talk to former wrestlers, this is the type of event they miss the most. The Dodgers and Rams have been cleaning up. Oh, here, where did I? Just a minute, because I know I. I'm sorry. Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. It had a picture in front of it. I'll start the one sentence again. The Dodgers and Rams have been cleaning up in the past 5 years inside Wells Fargo Arena. Either Fort Dodge or Southeast Polk has won the state title 4 of the past 5 seasons. The Dodgers claimed the team title in 2018, while Southeast Polk won 3 straight from 2015 to 2017. In that same time frame, Southeast Polk has secured 41 individual medals to the Dodgers' 34. Fort Dodge does lead the individual state championship haul with 11 during that stretch, compared to the Rams' 8. They are a very good team and have a balanced lineup like usual, Thompson said. We need to just do our best and see where it goes from there. They're the 19th ranked team in the nation for a reason. The Dodgers, who are currently ranked 43rd in the nation, will send 8 ranked wrestlers to the mat, while the Rams have 11. There are scheduled to be 6 ranked showdowns in all. Sounds good. And also at the top of this page, we have a small little article, but I'm going to read it because I know him. Brad Weedy of Fort Dodge rolled a perfect game in the Fort Dodge Ford Toyota Classic League last week. Wheaties 300 came in a 626 series. Matt Johnson nearly reached the 800 series mark for the High Men's Cities Royal, also in the Fort Dodge Ford Toyota Classic League, and Johnson had a 793 series with games of 269, 266, and 258. Jack Hook, 746, turned up in the best men's handicapped league score, and Kathy Baker, 633, edged Kelly Wagner by a single pin in the women's competition. And Caleb Anderson, 678, was the youth league leader. Okay, then we also have Webster City grad, first team academic All-American, and this is by Troy Banning. It's been 3.5 years since Victor Juergens roamed the halls of Webster City High School, but not much has changed. The 2016 Webster City grad still has his long curly locks, he's still impressive on the football field, and he's still smart as a whip. Now a fourth-year student at Drake University in Des Moines and redshirt junior on the Bulldogs football team, Juergens was named a Division I Academic First Team All-American by the College of Sports Information Directors of America earlier this week. The award is nice because it represents all of the hard work I've put in since my freshman year, Juergens said. Getting to this point and having a solid GPA, it exemplifies all of that hard work. With a 3.98 grade point average, Juergens will receive his undergraduate degree in finance and economics on Saturday. He's currently tackling a dual role in the classroom and began a graduate program in corporate leadership this fall and is on track to receive his MBA, which is his master's, in the spring of 2021. 5 years for an undergraduate degree and master's, all while playing Division I football, not bad at all. Drake had three players named in the academic All-American teams, the most in the nation. Its two first-team members tied the United States Naval Academy for the top spot. Drake offensive lineman Jacob Bacon joined Juergens on the first team. Offensive lineman Isaiah Kent Schneider was named to the second team. A 6'2", 274-pound defensive lineman, Juergens started all 11 games for Drake this fall. He recorded 19 tackles, including a team-high 3 sacks, and also forced 2 fumbles. The Bulldogs went 6'5", 6'2", in the Pioneer Football League, where they shared the runner-up spot with Dayton behind San Diego. Juergens has 1 year of football eligibility remaining. A Class 3A first-team All-State linebacker at Webster City in the fall of 2015, Juergens helped the Lynx win 11 games and reach the state quarterfinals in a prep senior. He made the switch from defensive end to linebacker prior to the start of the 2015 season, and soon after the college coaches came calling, and Drake was the perfect fit. The reason I came to Drake was for the business school, and if you look at the rankings, especially in the Midwest, Drake is right up there, Juergens said. They offered the program I wanted, and then the opportunity to put the Division I sticker on the back of your helmet. Being able to mix those two worlds has been awesome. Juggling a strenuous academic workload with football at the collegiate level isn't easy for anyone, but Juergens says he's found ways to succeed at both. It comes down to choices, he said. A lot of people mess up with the GPA because they're on their own in college, but for me, I already had a schedule with football, so it was really easy for me with being structured. You have to prioritize things. I had to give up some of the ancillary parts of college, but that's fine. Ancillary. Well, anyway, following the completion of his MBA, Juergens hopes to utilize his skills in the financial world. With my finance degree, they look almost alike. The great thing I can apply is everywhere, he said. But I think I'd like to look for opportunities to trade derivatives from the stock market. In the present, though, Juergens said he'll continue to try to excel in the classroom and on the football field. After next season, I'm walking away from football and we'll never meet again, he said. As far as Drake goes, I've met some of the best friends I'll ever have in my life. When it's 5 a.m. and you're doing gassers on the basketball court and throwing up, those are bonds that you're not going to make with a lot of people. I guess not. All right, and we also have... see what time it is. Nope, we're getting there. This one is by Eric Pratt. Kershaw makes it official. He'll be a UNI Panther. A recruit's journey is often filled with complicated emotions and difficult decisions. Tyson Kershaw experienced plenty on both in the process of choosing a college. Ultimately, Fort Dodge's standout receiver followed his heart and officially signed a letter of intent on Wednesday to play football at the University of Northern Iowa. It wasn't an easy choice for the two-time first-team All-Stater, who had originally given verbal commitment to the University of South Dakota. When Panther head coach Mark Farley made one final push for the 6'3" Kershaw's services last week, though, the offer from the Dodgers' first love became too good to refuse. They have a really strong track record in Cedar Falls, and when I went there for my official visit, I talked to the players and they talked about getting treated right, said Kershaw, who finished his career ranked in the top 10 all-time. That's what page am I on? Here we go. All-time for receptions, yards, and touchdowns in Class 4A history. They also have a really good business school, and that's what I want to major in. Kershaw is set to become the first Fort Dodge grid athlete in 23 years to join the Panther program. After a virtual pipeline sent players like Tim Mosley, Alonzo Clayton, Nate Zier, Matt Zier, and Terry Reiners from Fort Dodge to the UNI Dome during the Terry Allen era, the well-run drive for all intents and purposes until this week. It's truly an honor to receive the scholarship offer, but it feels good to know I've earned it, said Kershaw, who joined Sam Cook last month as the only multi-time Dodger first-team All-Staters in the school history. Hopefully, I'm setting a path for the future Dodgers to follow. Kershaw admitted the hardest part was breaking the news to the USD coaching staff. Being a full hour closer to home played a factor in the flip, as well as having a longer vested personal interest in the UNI program. Kershaw is also an all-conference basketball player and a state track performer. He picked up the Panthers over USD, a handful of other FCS schools, and a preferred walk-on offer from Iowa State. All right. What time is it now? Yep, we're getting there. Okay, I'm sorry, I just glanced at the clock. Let's look at the police log. We have harassment. This is from Tuesday. We have harassment that was reported in the 1000 block of South 21st Street. Two thefts were reported in the 700 block of 1st Avenue South. A theft was reported in the 1600 block of 5th Avenue South. And a theft was reported in the 2900 block of 5th Avenue South. An assault was reported in the 700 block of South 17th Street. A burglary in progress was reported in the 1400 block of 7th Avenue South. Theft was reported at the 2900 block of 5th Avenue South. And a fight was reported at the intersection of G and D Streets. Also, from Webster County on Wednesday, harassment of a public official. This was Samantha Klinger, the one I read earlier. She lives at 527 C Street, and her court date is January 10th. And there's also assault. This is Shane Gailey, with no age given. He lives at 1834 8th Avenue North, and trial is pending, transferred to another judge. As for our weather... today, it's mostly sunny with a high around 37 and a low around 24. A wind south-southwest from 5 to 10 miles per hour. On Friday, we will have partly sunny with a high around 38 and a low around 20. On Saturday, sunny, high around 42 and a low around 27. And on Sunday, it should be sunny with a high around 47 and a low around 30. Doesn't seem like Christmas, does it? Monday, partly sunny with a high around 46 and a low around 28. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, with a high around 41 and a low around 26. And Wednesday, there's a chance of rain, a high around 37 and a low around 25. Santa probably should get his rubbers out, huh? All right, our yesterday's high was 31, the low was 3, and last year's high was 44, and last year's low was 32. Okay, and looking at the clock, we're coming awful close, so I'm going to read the ending statement here. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. I thank the folks at Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge for so many years, and I thank you for listening with Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. So, you go out there and you have a good day, because the sun is shining and it's not that cold. Until next time, bye-bye.